It's been the full moon, so that probably means you're all quite psychically aware and extremely in touch with the various aspects of the existence. I have always found that the full moon time has a very unusual kind of an effect on people, on animals, on anyone who has a psychic capacity, because it gives us a greater awareness. It gives us a greater sensitivity to our environment and all that is around us. And it allows us to see things that ordinarily might be neglected or forgotten. I have seen that during these full moon days, animals are especially sensitive. They're very aware, much more aware of what's going on. I have even seen that there has been a study done by a respected university where they found out that during the few days before and up to the full moon and a few days afterwards, psychic capacity that is tested increases during that time. I've also found personally that distance healing works very good during these full moon days. But I was not going to talk about the full moon today. I was going to continue our discussion from last week, where we were speaking about connecting with plants and animals, and even we started speaking about connecting with crystals, although that is something that is extremely difficult to speak about, because the process of connection is not really a connection, but it is rather an acceptance of the environment, acceptance of the particular frequency of the crystalline structure. Actually, the structure of that which you are attempting to relate to is very important. Often we neglect structure. When, for example, we speak with other people, we sometimes only speak to what is right in front of us. We relate only to that which they are presenting to us. And perhaps also, if we're more sensitive, we may relate to that which is underneath the surface, which may be just specifically at the present moment causing a particular reaction to manifest in words or to manifest in their emotion. But this is not really a complete picture of a person. This is rather the momentary picture of a person. For example, I'll give you an example from the scientific point of view. There has been a bit of a controversy in my neighborhood about radiation, radioactivity, radon, these various radioactive particles and gases, which can cause difficulty to people in their health, can make them quite sick. And there are machines to measure this. And there is a momentary reading, and there is a long-term average. When it comes to a health problem or a health risk, it is only the long-term average which is important. If your long-term average goes over a certain point, then you have to do something about it. But if your long-term reaction is under the point, you don't do anything. Short-term, you don't really care so much. For example, something may give off short bursts of radiation. We know, for example, the sun, which we have no control over. and basically there is very little we can do, periodically gives off short bursts of increased radiation, solar radiation, which is in a very powerful form. But what is generally considered to be most important for us to deal with is this long-term average radiation that is coming from the cosmos. Now, in some countries, when the particular frequencies from the cosmos are very high in a particular day, that is generally known and people stay inside. That helps. Now, if somebody were to simply day by day do measurements or to have these momentary interactions with some source of radiation or perhaps with people, even I'm using it as an analogy to people, perhaps one day you come and you measure and it's very high in that moment. You may get this idea, I should avoid this source of radiation like anything and run away. Another, if you happened by chance, for instance, to measure a source of radiation when there wasn't any, you would think in your mind, it's fine. I don't have anything to worry about. Now, what problem this brings is that when your momentary measurement is not related to the overall picture, you get a false impression, either of security or of risk. This false impression is dangerous. It's more dangerous than any risk that might be there, and I'll explain why. Let's say, for example, you measure a usual source of radiation that would, over time, be quite high, yet you happen to measure it at a moment when it is not very high. So you get a false sense of security. You think it's fine. This false sense of security is more dangerous than the radiation, because had you measured it and understood that over time it gives a real sense of, gives a real indication of risk, you would at least be able to do something to protect yourself from it. But because you're unaware of the risk, because you took a measurement when the risk was not obvious, you have a false sense of security. And in this false sense of security, you think that all is well, whereas in reality, all is not well. And when all is not well, when you think it's well, this is a very serious situation. Similarly, turn it around. You think it's a great risk, but it's not. For example, let's take the example of water. Let's say, for example, you feel that your water is bad because one day you tested it and it was not good. But in actuality, it's generally not bad. It was just a momentary thing. Then you would never want to drink it again. Or let's say, for example, you tested water which is generally bad. So this paranoia that can come can also eat away the fundamental things which make your life work. Let's go back to people, because after all, we're concerned with people. We're not so concerned with the radiation and the water in this particular series of discussions. Let's say people. A person had a bad day. I mean a really bad day. A person was disturbed seriously. A person was given really bad news. A person's relationship broke down. I'm just trying to build up a picture of a person who's very disturbed momentarily. So momentarily, this person has had a really bad day. And this person is suffering terribly on this particular day. And you happen to meet that person on that day. Your opinion of them will be twisted by that first impression. Now, first impressions are important because often when we immediately get an impression of a person, this gives us a very clear picture of their fundamental being. And later on, we filter that impression. We filter it out by our desires or our experiences and so on. But sometimes these first impressions are when a person is at their worst. And even though it's true, the impression, we are seeing how they react in their most distressed situation. And from the point of view in first impressions, or from the point of view of understanding people, we might consider that to be very serious. But as far as I've seen, at least in my limited experience with the people that I have come in contact with, everybody has a bad side. I'm not talking here about a dark side. I'm not talking about an evil side. I'm talking about a bad side. Like when you're really upset. When your chemicals and hormones in your body are just all screwed up. When circumstances around you are out of your control and you're just really upset. We all have our bad sides. This is where this setting comes in. I started speaking about the setting. Of this setting, the environment, the structure. You know the structure, for example, we talked about in the beginning about this crystalline structure and this very, shall we say, rare occurrence by which we can find a connection or attempt to synchronize or to resonate according to the frequency of a crystal. Now, naturally, that's not an easy thing to do. Naturally, that's not something you would normally do. I'm not even sure why it would be valuable, but it is something that can be done. And yet, it cannot be done unless you are aware of the structure or the setting within which that crystalline vibration rests. The structure of the crystal is what makes it valuable. It's what makes it unique. It's what reflects light in that very specific way. It's what vibrates that frequency which crystals have that gives them the effect that they have. It's the structure of it. Scientifically, you would speak about it in terms of the crystalline structure. And, for example, a jeweler would be able to understand from the structure of a jewel. Of course, they would understand flaws and imperfections, but they would also be able to understand when the structure is very pure. And also when you speak about jewel, the setting of the jewel is very important. How it's polished. For example, diamonds, when they come out of the earth, diamonds are a very, very valuable kind of crystalline structure. They look very raw, they're dirty, they're uneven. You would look at them, you would not even recognize them as diamonds. They don't shine. They look like just some quartz even, perhaps. Not really, but then what you have to do is you have to polish them. You have to cut them so that there's some kind of a structure there which reflects the light, which shows the natural structure of the diamond, which gives that structure that enormous value that it has. So these structures... I'm just getting rid of these extra lights in my face. These structures are very significant when you speak about crystals, because these structures give the crystal its value, its its unique personality. So when we speak about people, because after all, this is the whole point of what we do, is to deal with people. So when we speak about people, what we are speaking about is not just that which is momentarily being presented to us, or which is perhaps the product of a bad day, or even perhaps which is the product of a good day, or perhaps is just the product of youth and beauty. One has to see the structure of the person, the way the person is built. And just like a jewel becomes better when inside a proper setting, when you put the diamond in a proper ring or you put in a necklace or something, it becomes more valuable, it becomes more brilliant, it becomes more wonderful. So you have to understand the structure of a person and the setting within which the person manifests themselves. In other words, the structure of the person, what they are as a person, and the setting within which they live, that which is around them, that which makes them what they are in their environment, their work, how they manifest to the world, their family. These things are important because, let's get back to the bad day again. Let's say you have a bad day. Well, there's a lot of reasons you can have a bad day. Let's talk, for example, about hormones, because this is something which I think is going to be a very, very important field of medicine in the future, because our hormones very much affect our energy levels, our moods. They can create mood swings from very depressed to overly hyper and enthusiastic, or love and hate kind of swings. It can depress our metabolism, or it can increase it enormously. It can affect the way our immune system deals with the way we live, the way we are. So we've seen in many ways, and this has also been shown in various forms of research, that hormones are a very, very important part of our lives. Yet whenever they have tried to do hormone replacement therapies, they found that in some cases it might be all right if you're lucky, but in some cases it can increase the risks of cancer. It can cause a long-term difficulty. Therefore, it has not become very mainstream. It's still on the outskirts of medical alternative forms of therapies. There can be a great danger with it, and therefore it's a risk. Now, let's just talk about this. Let's say you meet somebody whose hormones are in bad shape. And I'm not just talking about women. I know men make the mistake of thinking that this hormone problem, this is a woman's problem. And I laugh at that. It's really hysterical if you think about it. Only women have hormones? It's silly to think like that. Men have hormones too. And in fact, as men get older, just as women have menopause, men have andropause. Andropause, it's called. It's the same exact thing, except that it takes longer to manifest and it's more gradual. And we call it aging, but actually it's this same exact phenomena of the lack of hormones, that the hormones which make men men are diminishing because of the lack of the energy there in the body due to the age. So you've got men and women both having hormone imbalances. And these things affect us very deeply. There's also even just small imbalances of chemicals in the brain, even a lithium deficiency can cause all kinds of problems. Just a few little chemicals. So let's say you're talking to somebody. And if you see them as a complete picture, and I know that's very difficult to do, you will see a physical body that is affected by chemicals, by hormones, by physical pain. I know in my own body I have pain practically all the time. This is just the way it is. It's just, there's some people who are like that. It's various forms of problems. You know, you're turning all night long because you lay on this side, it hurts. You turn, lay on that side, it hurts. It's just the way it is. You just live with it. And I was once talking to one chiropractor doctor who I go to. He's very good. And he asked me, does it hurt? And I said, well, hurt. Now, what does that mean? What do you mean by the hurt? And then he was laughing. He said, yes, you people who have pain all the time relate with pain entirely differently than a person who doesn't have pain all the time. A person who doesn't feel pain, if you make them feel a little pain, they go, ah! Because that's like a big thing to them. Because they don't feel pain all the time. For a person who feels pain all the time, you give them some kind of pain, they go, ah, another one. For those who have pain all the time, pain is not a significant factor in life. Because to survive, you push pain out of the picture of being significant. So then he asked me, again, the chiropractor, he said, well, okay, considering that we can't get a good answer out of you about the pain, let's put it this way. On a scale of 1 to 10, where is this pain? Because then I can relate it to more or less pain, which would be something he could understand. Because I suppose everybody's scale of 1 to 10 somehow or another makes sense. It's kind of like background noise. You know, you get above the background noise, you can understand more clearly where you are situated in a situation. So a person may have that pain, and that pain may make them agitated. For example, if you've got like some constant pain, if you've got a headache, the way you relate with people is completely different than if you don't have a headache. Yet, if I'm talking to a person and I'm not aware they have a headache, I will misunderstand it completely. Okay, you're getting my point. It's already clear what's going on. I'm speaking about our requirement, our necessity to try to understand as much as we can. Obviously, you cannot do it more than that. There's no way to do it perfectly. You cannot perfectly understand anything. But as much as you can to understand others, because their situations are not necessarily what they show us or what we can obviously perceive. And it may not even be something you can perceive even over some longer period of time, of days or weeks even. It's a question of acceptance. Now, last week, we talked about this communication, connection, the psychic capacities, and the way to understand things that are beyond our own usual sense of what we are allowed to perceive. And what I'm speaking about today is very important in regards to that, because it is based on a certain principle of, shall we say, two-way communication. Now, I'm going to change this way I'm talking about this, and I'm going to enter into something else, which is completely related to this, which is the basis of all connection to all things, especially to people, especially to the Supreme, to the universe, and so on, and yet which is completely related to the fundamental building blocks of existence. So allow me to move into this direction. Any communication is a two-way affair. Any acceptance of life, and I'm meaning here now in terms of accepting a body, to be born in a body, is a two-way affair. I'm going to give you this example of how our energy field works. And then I'm going to relate that to understanding in general, into the way humans relate with each other, the way humans relate to nature, the way humans relate to the universe, and the way humans become something divine. Energy is not something which is one way. For example, it's not that you just receive energy from the universe. You're not a sponge that has no capacity other than to soak up. You are a combination. You soak up, you bring out, you emanate out. That everyone knows. Just like you just have to be angry once to know that. The way you put out anger, you practically can knock people over with your anger. There's so much energy going out. And think about it. When somebody's angry at you, you're just soaking it up and it's making you bewildered and so on. So everybody knows we absorb energy, we send out energy. That's obvious. But what's less obvious and what in many respects is much more important and significant is that this bringing in and this sending out happens at the same time. In many respects, it happens at the same time. Now that is very important to know how what this incoming energy and this outgoing energy occur at the same time. Nobody is some kind of an island, or nobody is completely separated. We are always connected and always connecting at the same time. It's a continuous in and out. It's a continuous acceptance and sending out. Receiving and transmitting. And if you look at a chakra, people think in terms of chakras that it does one thing at a time. It's just sending in, sending out or receiving in. Those who are aware know that in healers, their chakras are receiving at the same time they are sending. Yet, I am quite sure that chakras have within them at the same time and in all times the energy of bringing in and the opposite energy of sending out. This is going on continuously at the same time, except that when we are predominantly sending out, that aspect of the spin becomes prominent. And when we are predominantly receiving, that aspect of the spin becomes predominant. When one aspect becomes predominant, the other fades or weakens. So it will not be obvious anymore, even to somebody who's psychically looking at it. But it is always there. If you remember this generator that we use, that's in the front page of harrymedia.net, which is our like little secret symbol. So you've got this here. One pyramid is moving clockwise. The other is moving counterclockwise upside down. The reason this works so significantly is because It represents the way in which energy is relating in every fundamental aspect of existence. There is the receiving and the transmitting. Every particle of existence is receiving and transmitting energy simultaneously, according to its structure, according to its characteristic, and according to its setting. Because you even take radioactive particle, you put it in lead, its radioactive capacity is the same, but there's no transmission. It may be packed in lead. The setting has changed its quality. Now, this simultaneously receiving and transmitting is a bit of an esoteric secret. Because if you see life as just, if you just concentrate on the accepting, and you don't concentrate on the transmitting, you're getting a one-way impression of things. Let me give you an example, and I'll come back to this simultaneous transmitting and receiving and how it relates to our energy field in a second. Let's say I'm talking to somebody, and I'm simply speaking, and they are not relating at all. They are not reciprocating. They are not even responding. They are totally neutral in this conversation. How do you feel about that? Does that encourage you to continue speaking? No, it does not. You don't become inspired. For you, this becomes something which is a chore. Every school teacher knows this. If you're sitting in front of a group of 15-year-olds teaching them about chemistry, and they couldn't care less. They are not listening. Their minds are off in the universe somewhere else. They don't care. They're not interested. Teaching becomes an enormous work. It becomes an enormous effort because you're getting no feedback. You're getting no reciprocation. Do you know right now, as I'm transmitting this broadcast, that there is a communication going on? Do you know that there are little packets being sent out, little packets of information? And these packets have to be in the right order. And there is a little protocol going on that you never notice, which is just seeing which packet number is this and which packet number is this. And whoops, that's wrong. Put it this way. Make it straight. Everything has to be in the right line. If it wasn't for that kind of protocol, these images that we're looking at on the video would all have these little squares everywhere as a piece of this image would enter into this other image. That's what happens when you see all these weird images on your screen. You have pieces of different frames, so to speak, mixing with other frames, and you get this mess in your image. It's all because there's these little programs which are going on under the surface, which are saying this frame has this pixel and this frame has that pixel. This goes before that, and this goes in this place, and that goes in that place. If you think about it on a very deep level, the way in which these things we take for granted, like our transmission over the internet, it's a fabulous thing. Every pixel has to go in the right spot on each and every frame, and it has to stay that way, even though it's all this information coming frame after frame after frame. 25 frames a second. Well, actually, I'm broadcasting at 17 frames a second on the main broadcast. But anyway, just think about this, how complex it is. And because it's a constant thing, it works perfectly. Now, let's go back to that teaching chemistry to the 15-year-olds. What kind of an educational experience is it? Kids don't want to hear. Teacher doesn't want to teach. Everybody's there only because they have to be there. What kind of fun would this be? What kind of an experience would this be? Well, actually, not a very good one. Now let's go back to this reciprocation in regards to our personal communications. This sending and receiving at the same time. This clockwise and counterclockwise motion. This way in which our chakras are moving in two directions at once. This way in which every atom in our body is doing that. In its way in which it's receiving energy, it's affected, and it's sending energy, it's affecting. It's something very extraordinary. Now, if I'm talking to somebody, what if it's a proper, so to speak, I don't even know if I should use the word proper, maybe I should say if it's a effective, meaningful communication. If it's an effective, meaningful communication, this two-way street is going on constantly. That means even if I'm just listening to you, I'm sending off little bits of energy that are saying, packet received. I understand. I accept what you are saying. I'm not judging it. I receive it. And if those little packets of energy are going out, the person who is speaking is encouraged. We gave this lecture in Moscow maybe 2 years ago about understanding how mystic capacity can be attained by anybody by simply understanding others. Mystic capacity. You don't need to have mystic powers. You don't need to have psychic powers to help others. All you need to do is simply listen. And not in the way in which the 15-year-old listens to the chemistry teacher. That's just an example. Some 15-year-olds actually love chemistry, but that's different. I mean, in the example of simply receiving, listening, and sending off those little packets that say, information received, transmission clear, I read you loud and clear, I understand you, I feel you. Nowadays, amongst the black community, there is this new phrase. Instead of saying, do you understand me, they say, do you feel me? Because understanding is something that may be there on the mental level, but feel me, do you feel me? I love that phrase. I think it's really good. It's a very deep phrase. Do you feel me? Do you feel what I'm sending to you? Because it's beyond words. So when you are receiving and listening and accepting, what you are really saying is, I feel you. I feel you. I feel you. And when you feel the person and they are sending to you this constant stream of what they are and you're actually feeling them, you are bringing them into your field and there is a real communication, a real trust. In fact, this is the way in which love takes place. When you just feel a person, when you just accept them, when you just listen, when you just care. You care about them. You care about what they are. You care about their feelings. You care about what they say. You care about what they are expressing without judging it. And certainly without condemning it, simply accepting it. Sometimes just doing that is the greatest assistance you can ever do to any other person on this planet. But that is not possible unless you are in this constant reciprocation, where you're saying, as they are sending to you, I feel you, I feel you. Because they are also feeling you. It is not possible to be separate from another personality. It is not possible, even when you're speaking, to not be aware of how the other is feeling you. It is not possible. Everybody does it. There is nobody who's a stone. Everybody does it the same way. Maybe, of course, some are much better at receiving and understanding. But everybody feels each other all the time. And this is, I think, the basic assumption we have to make when we deal with each other. Otherwise, we can never deal properly. Otherwise, we can never have any relationships. Because we are feeling the other person is feeling us, and our communication becomes deep, it becomes aware, it becomes powerful, it becomes real. And this real communication has real power. Now, just consider our relationship with the world, with the energies of the universe, with the energy of nature, with the earth, Mother Earth and her energies, the energies of the heavens. So we're receiving, because our cells, our little energy vortexes, whatever you want to call them, all over our bodies, our chakras, are constantly receiving, constantly receiving. Yet, are we sending back a reciprocating, I feel you? Think about that. If you are feeling the earth, and the earth is sending you this beautiful, loving energy, and you feel it, and you reciprocate, you feel, you send the feeling to the earth of, I've received that, thank you. Would you be able to throw garbage, to throw polluting substances, poisonous chemicals? Would you actually be able to do that? If you felt and you reciprocated, could you pollute the air? Could you pollute the water? Could you pollute the earth? No, you couldn't. You couldn't do it with another person. Let's say, if you are feeling another person, in that sense of reciprocation, let's say somebody's pouring their heart out to you and explaining how they feel so badly about something that has happened to them, and then you say to them, ah, oh, you're just an idiot, without any feeling. Could you do that if you were actually feeling how they felt? I'm sure everybody could do that, but you would not want to do that. You would rather just offer sympathy, offer empathy, because sympathy kind of becomes like a pity. Empathy is much better. You have an empathetic vibration that I feel your pain and I'm with you. I'm with you here. Similarly, you couldn't do that to the earth or the water because you're feeling that. You couldn't harm animals because you're feeling that. Of course, if you actually felt like this, you'd have to go live in the forest, totally in nature, because you wouldn't be able to live in this world anymore. You wouldn't be able to drive a car. I know people who are into, you know, like not even killing insects. They're so careful about that. But these same people will drive a car at night with their lights on and kill thousands of insects on the front of their car and on their windshield and not think about it. Because you can't avoid it. You can't avoid all of this non-empathetic interaction you're having with everything there is. It's the nature of this world we have created. It's the setting of it. Understand? It's the setting of it. It's in a setting. A setting of environmentally incompatible situations. Similarly, Our whole setting as people is in a incompatible situation for human beings. We have to see this. We have to feel how a person's job, for instance, is a lousy place for them to be. It's making them feel awful. It's giving them enormous stress. It's causing them to have to deal with people who give them great pain. They're being pushed down and made to feel insignificant. You get the idea. This is just some example. Or persons' relationships, or persons' families, or persons' bodies. The pain, or the chemical imbalances, or a disease they're not even aware of. Do you feel me? What I mean to say here is that when we see people in a particular setting, we see them very differently. And we become less inclined to judge them. We become less inclined to judge them. We become less inclined to condemn them. You know, there is a saying, I don't know where it came from, but I know that we say it. There but for the grace of God go I. You have that in Russian? It means that if it wasn't for the grace of God, I'd be in the same exact situation as that person. Yeah, I figured. And that is a very important thing. A few little twists of fate, a little unfortunate situation, and where would I be today? Think about that. Things you take for granted, things we all take for granted, one little difference, one accident that could have happened, one crash, some being in the wrong place when there was a disaster. There, but for the grace of God, go I. When you see a homeless person, or you see a drunk on the street, or you see a person who's gone insane because they can't deal with anything, a person who committed suicide, often you can judge and condemn such people. But there, but for the grace of God, go I. And then there are people who are thieves and crooks and murderers. And yet, there's a reason for it. And if it could happen to that person, it can happen to me. And there, but for the grace of God, go I. What if I was born in a horrible family? What if I was born struggling just to eat and constantly being placed in horrible situations and abused left and right as a child and born to a drug addict mother and having this in my blood from birth? There, but for the grace of God, go I. So therefore, when you see people differently, you see situations differently, you deal differently, you respond differently, you react differently. That does not mean you must accept everybody equally, you must relate with everybody in the same way, invite them into your home, and so on. That is not what I mean. But I mean when there is an opportunity to do something and you can make a difference. Be thankful for what you have and what you've got and make that difference. Anyway, these are just little points, but they have a deep impact because when you understand the setting, when you understand the person's personal structure, you understand the setting within which they are in living, and you are actually hearing them, you are actually empathizing, you are actually experiencing them, you see everything differently. You understand things differently. And you become one of those people that just make a difference in this world. To make a difference in this world, to make a difference even in your environment, doesn't require that you do something huge, that you're some fantastically empowered person. All that is required is that you, right here, right now, are aware. You become aware. You increase your awareness. By understanding this constant, non-stop transmission and reception that is going on, to be aware of the two-way street always. Always be aware of the two-way. Let's take an example which I think everybody's thinking of. Let's say somebody's really on your case and giving off all kinds of negativity to you. Let's say a person is really pushing out towards you bad energy, negative energy. So what do? Do you just, I feel you and I understand. The other person says, you better understand. I'm going to beat you. You're nonsense, horrible. You're just disgusting. Blah. So at that point, because you understand, and that's the important point here, because you understand them, because you understand the setting of what they are in, because you know what's going on, you do not accept this transmission as representative of what they are. And because the transmission is anyway not beneficial to either personality, you just don't accept that either. And you do not send your own transmission, which reciprocates with that and increases that energy of the person. You choose to simply not respond, to not reciprocate, to not respond to them in the way in which they are sending to you. Because you are aware. And you are aware constantly of this in and out, this constant way in which energy is flowing. And therefore, when required, you diminish the capacity to come in and you diminish the capacity to go out temporarily for the sake of the situation, which is best for the situation. Sometimes it's better to just let somebody scream and kick and yell and calm down. How does this relate to the theme of last week? Well, it relates directly. It's another one of those mystical alchemies. It's one of those mystical alchemies which give one that factor that makes it work. That little something that makes it work. For example, you can make this experiment. Especially this is done if you can feel energy somehow. I mean, you don't have to be great at it, but to just sit in front of a person, not look at them in the eyes, because that's not good. When you look a person in the eyes, there's all of a sudden another power there where we're controlling what you should see, what you should not see, and there's all these mental things going on, but kind of look at them, but not directly, just off a little bit. And don't focus anything on them. Just allow your eyes to be a little bit less focused, but to see a general image of what those people are, what that person is. And just feel. And when you start to feel, when you get an impression, acknowledge it. Say yes, not verbally, in the same energetic way. Yes, yes, I understand that. And yes, I understand. I am feeling that. I hear you. Because when you send that off again, they'll send more information. Everybody does this. There's always something they send out because that which is most on your mind or most in your heart, you can't hide that. It just is there. And why it's there is because really you're just eager for somebody to say, hey, I understand that. That's all you're really doing. You've got that thing flying out of your heart that you don't speak, but you're just waiting for somebody to come up and say, oh, I understand how you feel. And to then reciprocate with you in that way. So when you actually do that, when you actually understand and feel that, then what's all those things, what are behind it, start to come out one after another. And then you go, yes, I understand, yes. And because you are doing this acknowledgement, this acknowledgement of the information they have sent to you, this acknowledgement encourages further communication. So it's like a statement, an acknowledgement. A statement, an acknowledgement. An acknowledgement of the acknowledgement. A thanks and an acknowledgement. A fear and an acceptance, an understanding. A love and an acceptance. Sending a love in response. Do you understand? It's this two-way street, energetically. This is what psychic people do. This is what people who have capacities do. This is basically all that's going on. Sometimes some people have the capacity or desire to know about past things, so they agitate your energy field to find out about your past, and then you just kind of show it to them, and then they tell you about it. Sometimes people do that with the future. Sometimes either it's done by agitating the person's plans and present and understanding how that's moving, but that's very difficult to do. Or else you get a picture from the ether, the etheric future that is assembling, because everything assembles first in the ether and then manifests on the earth. That is why we create our futures like this. So by this sensitivity, by this, you can do the same thing with the ether. You can connect to a personality in the ether the same way by just calling to them. You know, it's really funny when you think about how obvious this all is, how common sense obvious this all is. If you want to connect to somebody, you call out. You know, we do it all the time with the telephone. We call their number. Each person is connected to a number, some telephone number somewhere. And then when someone picks up the phone, we say, hi, can I talk to whoever? We make the endeavor to actually speak out, can I connect to this one? We do it with our mouth, our voice, and our ears. The same exact thing is there in all levels of communication. Let's say you want to connect to some other person. You call out to them energetically. You call out to them in the ether. The ether vibrates their name. The ether vibrates their energy. And immediately a connection is made etherically to the person. Now, whether or not you understand it is another issue. But the ether makes the connection because everything is connected. Now, if you are aware when that connection is made, you are connected to the person in that way. And all it really means is you're calling out on the etheric telephone. You're dialing the number etherically. What is the number? The person's name, or a person's object, or a person's form. You have immediately the connection to this person. Then the question is, how do you initiate the conversation? Well, you know how you siphon gas from a car? You have to make some suction and then it comes in. So you have to start the communication by just contacting them. Like a hello, how are you? I know that sounds strange, but that's not exactly what one does psychically, but it's the same kind of a thing. It's kind of an etheric hello, an etheric connection. And then it comes and you reciprocate and you acknowledge and you accept. This can be done with persons who have died. When people have died, relatives, especially your relatives, or especially those who somehow have a relation to you, your friends, you can call out to them. And if they are in a situation to respond, then they will. Because not always are they in a situation to respond. There are situations of people who have departed where they no longer are in that kind of a structure for reciprocation. You may be able to reciprocate with their thought forms, with their energetic forms, their elementals. Or you may be able to reciprocate with energy that has been left behind. Sometimes you can reciprocate with them in their new bodies, if they've taken birth again. Interesting. I had that experience a few times. I wasn't exactly sure what was the value of it. I mean, it was cool. I can't say a lot of times, maybe twice, but definitely it was, I felt. Of course, it's all my opinion anyway, so I can say whatever I like. So one has to use the same exact technique, the same exact methodology to understand the structure of a person, understand the setting within which they are, to ask and to receive and to acknowledge and to be aware and perceive and to be sensitive and to accept and to meaningfully reciprocate and respond. Meaningfully means meaningfully to them. It may be meaningful to you, but if it has no meaning to them, it's useless. But it has to be meaningful to them, but it also must be meaningful to you. Because unless it has meaning to you, it really couldn't have any real value in this kind of reciprocation. Now, I'm not sure, but I have heard that you can do this also with the future. Now, the reason I say I'm not sure is because, well, ask me the same question in 20 years. Perhaps at that time I will say, yes, it really worked. But right now I can't say because my projections into the future are kind of long term. So 20 years from now, you can ask me the same question. Does it work? Then I can give you a good answer. But theoretically, and according to the way it feels, it probably could work, but I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if it works for all people at all times and all circumstances. Now, this idea of this connection also works perfectly in relationship to the divine beings because their capacity to transmit their energy, transmit their feeling to us is so much more powerful than anybody else. Actually, by definition, it should be easier to communicate with the deities or to communicate with God than to communicate with others. By definition, it should be easier. And yet, we find in religions all around the world the idea being given that it's actually harder, that you need this like enormous capacity, you need this enormous advancement to do so because God is so far away. They've made God so separate from man. They've sent God so far away in God's own abode, so very distant, and requiring so many qualifications that it's impossible to connect. Whereas God or divine beings have enormous power and capacity to connect. They're just waiting for that reciprocation, that acknowledgement, that attempt, that listening. The problem is not on their side. The problem is on our side. When we believe we can't, when we know we can't, when we don't even bother trying, when we're afraid to do so, Or we're so filled with guilt about being so terrible and bad, we couldn't possibly think about coming before the Supreme, as if we are hiding now. Can you imagine the silliness of this? We don't want to approach God because we're so sinful. Yet, do you really think that we're hiding from God right now? Do you think like there's like this shield which we're hiding under? You know, God can't see me because I'm sinful. I'm hiding under my sin here. God can't see me now. It's like absurd. God sees everything, everywhere, at all times. There's no hiding. So your sinfulness or whatever silly thing you want to call it is a constant. Now, God always perceives it. The thing that's not a constant is when you say, I'll stop hiding from God, from the Supreme, from the Divine. I'll stop hiding. And instead of rather trying to deal with my sinfulness by just not allowing it to be seen, so-called, I say, all right, let me attempt the communication. Maybe something can be done here. Maybe some positive awareness can be developed. All it takes is our saying, yes, I want this. Yes, I wish to do this. It's two ways, because constantly it's coming. Constantly the transmission from that vastly superior in the sense of power, personality. And all we have to do is accept it and reciprocate and acknowledge. And when you do that, it's incredible what takes place. It's incredible what happens. It's incredible the amazing activities, the amazing feelings, the amazing capacities to be of service that can be developed. It's not that this is something that can be done only by advanced personalities. It is something that can be done by any personality who cares. You simply have to care. You simply have to want to. And develop that awareness without fear. Okay, I've given this like alchemical, esoteric technique, methodology to see everywhere, to see, to be aware. Okay, you're not going to be able to fly in the sky. That's a cool yogic power, I grant you. I'd love to just fly over to Russia, you know, with my guitar case. Doesn't work that way. You know, I have to get in a plane. Horrible. Love to just fly over, you know, with mystic power. Can't do it. But at least this awareness is available to everybody. And you might think that's like some kind of great mystic capacity, but it's an awareness which is just fabulous. A fabulous awareness that allows connection all, not bound by time, not bound by location, not bound by our own opinions of others or ourselves. Where one can be of real service, where one can actually be that loving, reciprocative personality that is there for all, for the service of all, for the service of the world, and in service of the Supreme.